Hey y'all, before we get started with today's episode, I wanted to take a quick minute to tell y'all about my friend Bailey Henry and the book she wrote entitled Having a Baby and Other Things I'm Bad At. This book is the perfect read for anyone who has been touched by infertility, miscarriages, or the loss of a child, which is something that we will talk about with today's guest. So I thought this was a really appropriate episode to introduce this book and author to you all. So Bailey started with her own journey through infertility, and she continues to tell stories to provide hope in the darkness. Her raw honesty and her lighthearted humor combined with her real-life situations make this a must-read for anyone who has struggled, or even if you haven't. I haven't personally experienced this pain or loss, and I was so touched by this book. You've got to get a copy of it. You can get it on Amazon or Audible if you're local to the Jackson area. I know we have it in some bookstores and children's stores around here as well. Having a Baby and Other Things I'm Bad At by Bailey Henry. You can purchase through the link in the show notes. This is Wellbeing Well Said, the podcast with me, Sarah Maloof. Join me as I chat with fitness gurus, business owners, wellness experts, and other inspiring individuals as together we dive into what it means to live well. Hey, y'all, welcome to the show. Today's guest, wow, I don't even know where to begin. Today's guest is Kate Jacobs. Kate and I met back in college, which you will hear us say, but in college, there were things about her I did not know until now when we had this conversation. And since then, she has lived a lot of life and experienced many highs, but also many very, very dark, deep lows. And I was just so honored and grateful that she'd be willing to open up and be so vulnerable and share this story with us today because, wow, it's inspiring, but also she is just such a light for the Lord. Her testimony is powerful, and I just guarantee that this episode is going to make you want to know the God that Kate knows, because it's just incredible the way that she's been able to feel his presence and the way he's worked in her life and how she's been able to draw near to him in return. I did want to go ahead and put out a little bit of a trigger warning. We do talk about some very difficult topics throughout this episode, and those include things like suicide and grief, extreme grief after losing a child. So if that is not something that you will be able to make space for today, that is okay. But if it's in your heart to keep listening, I guarantee you will benefit, because despite these things, Kate's story is not one of deep sorrow and misery. Yes, of course there's grief, and of course there's pain. We're human. We are meant to experience those emotions when something tragic like this happens, but she still has such hope. And again, I just can't say it enough how inspiring I find her and how grateful I am for her and the person that she is in my life and the person she's about to be in any of yours who are listening today. So Kate, again, thank you. You're amazing. And if you want to connect with Kate, I'm going to go ahead and link her name and social media in the show notes. She said she's very willing to open up and talk to anyone who might be interested in learning more about her or her faith or her story. So without further ado, Kate Jacobs, thank you so much for being on the show today. So Kate and I go back to the Mississippi State days. We met in college, the good old days, so to say. And since then, even though that's only been, I say only, God, it's been like what, about 10 years?
A decade.
10 years. Yeah. But 10 years in retrospect is not that long of a period of time, yet you've had a lot of life happen in 10 years. You've had a lot of ups, a lot of downs, and I'd love it if you could just kind of intro yourself, tell us a little bit about who you are, and again, a little bit more about your story and what's happened since you graduated college.
Oh, goodness, there is a lot that has happened to me. So I am Kate Jacobs. When Sarah and I first met, I was Kate Robinson, and I've gotten married since then. So I guess I've been out of college for 11 or 12 years now, and a lot's happened. I've gotten married. I lived in Memphis for a little while. I moved back to Madison, where I'm from. I had children. I've lost a child. I've had another child. But the most important thing in the past decade is that I gave my life fully 100% all in to the Lord. And since I've done that, my entire life has been better. Now, to mix in with that, I've lost a child, as I said. So how can your life be good, right, in a situation like that? But so I would love to start kind of where I really became a Christian. So I grew up in a great home with great parents. I was baptized like most people in the South when you're like in fifth grade, when you really don't know what you're doing or committing to. But when I was going into my freshman year, I went through Rush, and that's really where my whole life changed and where Jesus really entered into my life for the first time and I could see it clearly. And so I'll go a little bit fast through college, but it's important to note. So I went through Rush. My sisters were Kyos at Mississippi State. It's like, I'll be a Kyo. Like, I could be a book nerd, you know, like, not really, but like, I'll try. And so it didn't work out. As you know, I later on became a Pi Phi, but there were some things that happened and whatnot that we won't go into, but I was cut from Pi Phi, and I mean, up from Kyo, and it was devastating. Things that happened tarnished my relationship and my appearance to some people. There were some false things said about me that weren't really true, and that was very challenging. And so I dropped out of Rush. I could have gone in a few other sororities, but I didn't want to because I wanted to be a Kyo. So I dropped, and God later showed me the reason why I did drop. But in October of 2008, my freshman year, I found myself with a gun and ready to die and ready to just end it all. And between what had happened in Rush, which anyone that's going to be listening is probably like, that is ridiculous that, you know, it would hurt you that bad to be cut from a sorority, but it was more than that that happened. And I'd already dealt with depression just my whole life anyway. And so I found myself ready to just not be alive anymore. It's like, no one will miss me. It doesn't matter, whatever. So in that moment, when I'm holding a gun, ready to kill myself, I asked the Lord, I was like, if you have any meaning for my life, if you don't want me to do this, I just like, show me. In that moment, it was like a weighted vest had just completely taken off of me. And I started just like thinking, what would my parents do if I died? And it's like, he flooded me with all these reasons not to do it. And I didn't. And I'm so thankful I didn't. A little bit later, I asked a friend about getting involved in Christian events and different things. And so the journey, I'm not sure if you were familiar with the journey, it's a Christian retreat that was done in Mississippi. And so anyway, it was like, we're on a weekend, you would go and you would host and other people would come, and it's just all centered around the Lord and fellowship and whatnot. So I got involved in that. And anyway, life got a little bit better. Fast forward, I ended up becoming a Pi Phi, which was fantastic. I loved it. I had a blast. So college is going pretty good. I'm dating a guy that I was dating in high school. I'm still dating him at this time. Such a toxic relationship. Both of us would agree. But we did date for several years and we broke up. It's very sad. So we broke up my junior year. And by the time I reached into my senior year of college, I didn't have a boyfriend. I was surrounded by my best friends that look like supermodels. And I'm over here like eating pizza every night, being so fat, weighing 200 pounds and like not being attractive. So I'm never going to find a boyfriend. And all the things that the devil is just totally flooding into my mind. And I found myself my senior year really sad in January, the end of January. And I remember being in Old Charleston in my apartment that I lived in. And I was sitting in my room and I'm on my knees and I'm like, Lord, I'm so unhappy. I'm broken. I'm lonely. You know, I just started feeling the way that I did a few years before that when I no longer wanted to live, I wasn't at that point, but I was starting to get there. So Lord, I want to hand it all over to you. Just, you know, guide me in whatever direction. If that is finding someone to marry, awesome. If it's not, please help me accept the loneliness that I feel, all that. So a couple of weeks later, I'm going to be nervous one day to tell my kids that I met their dad in a bar, but I met their dad in a bar. So Papa and SA were having a swap. And so it was at some bar, state theater thing. Anyway, then the theme, this is important to note, is Nickelodeon. And I'm like, I'm going to be Lillian from Nickelodeon, which I have no idea why. It wasn't even my favorite character. So my friend Tara helps me get ready. I am literally look just like Lillian. She wears a diaper. I had a diaper on.
Rugrats,
that Tara
right?
Literally made. Yeah Rugrats. And so I look crazy. But at this point, you know, I referenced that I was so overweight and big, but I lost weight over about a year. And so I look a little bit better and I'm loving it. I'm drinking. I'm real drunk. Sorry, Mom, if you ever hear this, but I was. And I hit up the bar in the swap and this guy walks up about halfway through the swap and it's my now husband, Trey then. And he's like, can I buy you a drink? I'm like, yeah, yes, you can. Yes, absolutely. And I look at the bartender. I'm like, I'll take two shots of Kamikaze. He was like, I don't want one. I was like, well, those are for me. what would you like? So anyway, I let him get a drink. Okay. So that night forward, we've never been apart. And I had no idea that the Lord would put someone in my life that I would marry and love in a Rugrats outfit. So anyway, that was so interesting. So not to spend too much on college, but I remember the next day telling my friend Tara, I'm going to marry him. I've literally never felt this way. And she's like, yeah, whatever. She's like, a couple weeks ago, you were crying about your ex-boyfriend. I was like, I know. But like, there's something special about him. Like my sisters had always told me, look for a guy that would be a good dad and would be a good husband. And aside from being a Christian, right? And I was like, he would make both of those. And so nonetheless, he asked me on a date, which our first date ended up being on Valentine's Day. And I was like, are you sure you want to do a date on Valentine's Day? Like, that's a little weird. Turns out, side note, just to be funny, he only got $50 a week for spending. And those shots were $15. And it was on a Tuesday. And I was like, I'm so sorry that I took all your money, like a good portion of it. Like, I hope this works out. So anyway, fast forward, we get out of college. And so it's a couple years later, I went a fifth year. And Trey was a year younger than me. So we graduated at the same time. He takes a job in Memphis. And I'm like, well, I'm going to roll to Madison because that is God's country. And I'm just going to live my parents, save up some money. We'll get married later on if you want to, whatever. So we get married. I mean, we get engaged within like 8 or 9 months of being out of college. And he's like, going to live in Memphis. Like, no, we're not. Got to move on back to Madison. Like, I'm not going there. My fam jam is here. So we end up in Memphis because I do love him. And as the Lord says, when you become one, you know, that's your family. That's your core family. And you've got to let go just as parents have to let go of their children when they get married. And I lived in Memphis for years hating it. And it caused friction in our marriage. Not enough for us to live sad all the time, I don't mean, but just I did not want to be there. And it wasn't because of Memphis. It was because I was so close to my family and all of my family lived in Madison. And I wanted to be a part of my niece and nephew's lives. And I didn't like it. And I share all this because God years later completely revealed why we were in Memphis. So to get to that point, I worked for Enterprise for a year, rent a car, which was awful. Anybody that's worked there is so bad. Anyway, I did that because I heard it was a good way to get a job with FedEx. So I go on with FedEx while I'm in Memphis. I'm like 25, 26 years old. I get on with FedEx in the inside sales department, which just means I did selling over the phone. And a couple years into that job, there's a position that came open for an outside sales position in Madison. And this is where I'm like, God, thank you for answering my prayers. I'm going to move to Madison.
Before we go any further, I just want to interject, because circling back to something you said earlier, these stories you talked about through college, the struggles with depression, extreme depression, even enough that you were possibly willing to take your own life, and then hitting your knees your senior year and just seeing that answer to prayer so clearly turn around. But it's just so interesting. And I think it's worth noting that you really never know what someone's going through, because me being someone who, we were not best friends, I wasn't a part of these struggles with you, but we were friends. We saw each other a lot. And to me, you were always the happiest. You were like the happiest, most fun, energetic, like outside looking in, never would have looked at you like, oh, this girl is struggling with her mental health. Oh, this girl is really sad. This girl is fill in the blank. And I just think it's important to remember that you can check on your strong friends. You don't need to assume anything about anyone. And you really never know what small interaction you have with someone could make or break someone's day, could really stick with them, could turn their day around. And that's just really interesting. Thank you for opening up about all that, because I think it's important to note that you don't have to be the sad girl on the outside to be a sad girl on the inside. And vice versa too. You don't have to be the life of the party to be really joyful on the inside. Like you just never know.
It's my motto, and what I try to be in life is be a light. You don't know what someone's going through. Be polite. Mm-hmm. Say thank you. How are you today? Or, you know, it just makes a difference, and it could make a difference to make or break that person you're talking to. And I wish I had learned that earlier in life. So for sure.
Yeah. So bringing it back up to, you're in Memphis, and an opening with FedEx comes up in Madison. So it's in
So in Madison, so I'm like, this is great. My husband's like, I have a really good job in Memphis. I don't know if I want to move. I was like, zip it. Like, we are so moving home. God was like, no, you're not. So I never wanted to keep living in Memphis. However, the director of FedEx in the outside sales, so a position in outside sales came open in Memphis, just how it did in the Madison area, right? So we got these two jobs. I'm not even interested in the one in Memphis. Like, not today. People are like, you were dumb if you're not interested in that. It's the best sales city to be in Memphis, okay? And with FedEx, because it's the headquarters. So I'm like, so I'm kind of tolerating the idea, because I was approached by the Memphis manager and then the director. They were like, we want you to come and be on our sales team here. I was like, yeah, no. And they were like, no, really. And so they were pursuing me. And I don't say that slap on my back to brag on it. I promise I'm not, because I'm telling you, I did not want to take that job. I was not interested. By Felicia, stop talking to me about it. But you know, God shifted my heart and my thought very quickly on that. And I started feeling really anxious about moving to Madison. And I didn't know why. And I'm like, I need to listen to that feeling that my husband's having and that I'm having. So obviously I take the job in Memphis, still wanting to move home, but I take the job. And this is at the December of 2017. Okay. So in the summer of 2018, I become pregnant. Okay. So me and my husband were trying. The OB said it would take like 3 to 6 months. Lies they tell. I'm pregnant in like a month, you know, less than a month. And I'm like, woo, going to be a mom. But I can't believe I'm a mom, because I'm like a kid with an adult salary and a mortgage. But I'm like, feel like a kid inside. So can I have a kid? So I'm kind of nervous about it. But we find out in late June that we're having a child. I'm excited about it, blah, blah, blah. And I remember going to the first OB appointment, and Dr. Ali, and she is fantastic.
Okay? That was like, my doctor in Memphis.
I love that. Shout out if she ever hears this. Like, I love her.
She was wonderful. Yes. Hilarious.
She didn't deliver me, okay. But I love her. Like, I absolutely love her. She is, as you know, she is who I needed. Mm-hmm. God put her in my life because there's so many OBs in that practice. I needed her. Okay. And I didn't know that. But the first time we met, I remember meeting with her and I said, I just want you to know, if something is wrong in this pregnancy, I will be okay. She's like looking at me kind of like I'm a psychopath. And we later talked about it. Like, you said something, if there's wrong, it'll be fine. So I was like, I just have this feeling that something may be wrong. And if it is, no problem. Like, we'll be okay. Fast forward, we have that combo, right? I'm probably like 8 weeks pregnant. So fast forward to my anatomy scan, which happened on October 21st. Trey had been going to all the appointments with me and I was like, don't worry about it. Like, I've already had a few. My mom's going to come into town. She can go with me. And the Lord knew that I truly believe that I needed to be the only person out of me and Trey at this appointment, and then my mom needed to be with me. So we did a scan, and I remember the scan lasting like 30, 35 minutes, which is really long for a scan when you're pregnant. Like, they typically don't do it that long, but I'm emailing on my phone by this point. Like, I'm not paying attention, but my mom is. And so then we go into the room and it takes almost an hour for Dr. Ali to come in. And I'm at this point, like, something's going on. Like, I've never been in this office for more than 2.5 hours. And she comes in and the look on her face is like, she had just been sucker punched. I mean, and I'm like, what's wrong? Say, well, your baby has hypoplastic left heart syndrome. I'm like, well, that sounds real bad. What does that mean? And turns out, so that is where you are missing the left part of your heart. And for anybody that's like me, that barely passed science, turns out the left part of your heart is the most important part of your heart. If you've got to be missing a side, you want to be missing the right side. And in this case, she was missing the left. And so she said, I'm going to send you to see on October 25th. I'm going to set you up with the high-risk OBs that overlay with UT and Le Bonheur. There's a 9 in that group. Like, I'm going to hand you off to them. You'll come and see me just for general checkups and stuff, but for your baby, you're going to see them going forward. She said, and I do want to just let you know, if we are right, it's going to be a very challenging pregnancy going forward. A lot of doctor's visits, a lot of scans. I'm like, okay. So
when you hear that, how did you feel in that moment? What was going through your mind? Was it fear? Was it anger? Was it a piece that you can't explain? Like, an initial reaction? I know you obviously had the strong faith, but what was your just response immediately?
Yes. And I'm so glad you said strong faith, because I do, but I never want to come across that like life's not hard and I didn't struggle. Because I did. It's just, I was a little bit better because of my faith. I was numb. I was so glad my mom was there. The look on my mom's face was devastating. I was more worried about telling my husband than I was myself. I think, you know, my husband would agree at the time. I was more of the strong person in the relationship. And so I'm glad I found out first and was able to tell him. I was real numb. It was kind of like an outer body experience. And I just thought, well, what are we going to do going forward? You know, I just didn't know. I didn't have a whole lot of time to process it and really think about it. I didn't know much about it. I know now how just important it is to have the right part of your heart. I mean, the left part of your heart. And I didn't then. So I just didn't know, right? So on October 25th, which is just a few days later, we meet with the OBs. It is mine and Trey's wedding anniversary. Can't remember. I think we were married for like 4 years or something like that. But we go on our wedding anniversary and they confirm that it's hypoplastic left heart syndrome. The good part is that nothing else was wrong. So typically when a child is born with hypoplast, which is typically what it's called, there's other organs that things are wrong with. Okay. Like, your lungs have something wrong with them, all the ventricles that go through your heart. She didn't have anything wrong besides missing the left side of her heart, which is important, but it gave her so much more of an advantage that nothing else was wrong. Okay. With any other organ, she was fine. They said, that gives you better odds. It was brought up of termination. And I was like, I will not terminate this baby. I don't care if I am dying on the table. She can be born and we can take our chances then, but I am not terminating the baby. So that was taken off the table. So anyway, going forward, I'm like, so what happens now? Okay. Now we know for sure that she has hypophosphatemia. Like, what happens now is you're about to go to a lot of doctor's appointments. So in between 25 weeks, and I went all the way to term. I went into labor at 40 weeks, which was just a hot mess. I was real ready to have her. But your lungs are not fully developed until you're almost 40 weeks. So that was a good thing I went that long. And so there was a lot of doctor's visits. I had about 2 ultrasounds a week for 15 weeks. And they lasted anywhere between 1 hour to 3 hours long. And so that was a lot. And it was a lot mentally, but I had time to prepare. So I was thinking I was going to give birth with Dr. Ali this whole time up until obviously we find out something is wrong. And I had to deliver at the Med. So anyone listening, the Med is a trauma hospital in Memphis. And like, to be honest, nothing against UMC and Jackson, but like if something traumatic happens to me, like I want to get transported to the Med. Like they have really good trauma doctors and whatnot. Having a baby.
Yeah.
I had to find out that I had to deliver at the Med. And you hear Sarah laughing because you don't want to deliver at the Med. That's not a boutique hospital.
No, but the energy and the Med is not different. The same energy from no. I've been there, not as a patient, but my sisters have been there as patients. And so not to laugh at this because it's tragic in its own way, but this is like people walking in with bullets in their legs, you know,
yes.
people being, it's just really like trauma, not, hey, here's my child entering the world for the first time vibes, you know?
Right. Like you feel, and I'm not trying to be dramatic about this. And I guess that backstory, I had to deliver there because it's directly across the street from Le Bonheur Children's mm-hmm. Hospital. Mm-hmm. And she had to be right there by the hospital to be transported to Le Bonheur to be taken care of.
Gotcha.
So I understood. Obviously I did what was best for her. So, it's kind of like delivering in a jail. And I hate to say that, but like there were concrete walls up in these places. Like it's just crazy. So I go into labor, I have her, to note. So when you have a baby and you have a C-section, which is what I had to have, there's a doctor and like a couple of nurses. I mean, there's not many people in the room with you. So there's 25, we think either 25 or 26 medical professionals in the room with me. And I'm like, if y'all could get on this side of the curtain, that would be preferable, because they were all on the other side of the curtain where she was going to come out. And I was like, ain't nobody, this many people have seen me before. Like, anyway, I was trying to make light of the situation. And so she's born. I'd already prepared to not see her. I knew that the moment she was born, they put a breathing tube in and she left. And they took her over to Le Bonheur. And that was hard, but again, I prepared for it, but it doesn't make it any less hard. So luckily the folks at the Med were very nice and accommodating. My husband leaves and goes with her. And my mom, my dad, and both of my sisters were able to be with me in post-op, which anyone that been in post-op, you're not allowed to have anybody with you in the circumstances that change. So I had a section. Usually I have to be in the bed for 24 hours after you have a section. And I was up and walking within 8 hours. And I was discharged just after a day. And so the first time I met her, she was 2 days old. And I wasn't able to pick her up or anything like that. She hadn't had surgery yet, but she had all these tubes on her. And it's just not a obviously the way you want to meet your child mm-mm. for the first time. And when you have children one day, you will completely understand, right? I had never seen her face clear. They had tubes in her. It just was really hard. And then at 3 days old, she has her first open heart surgery. So I had to prepare myself for her to not come back out. I mean, when you have open heart surgery and you go on bypass at 3 days old, when your lungs are still developing, which is a very important part of the bypass, I mean, a very important part of the open heart surgery, it's just scary. So she goes through the surgery. The doctors had already said, the cardiovascular surgeon, who is a Christian, and I absolutely love it, we all prayed before the surgery. He comes back out afterwards. She was like, did amazing. Absolutely rocked it. Like, so proud. Not all the surgeries go that well. Typically, whenever you come out of open heart surgery for hypoplastic babies, they have to leave your chest open in case they have to go back in. And so they leave it open, and there's like a kind of like saran wrap, but obviously it's not saran wrap, it's over it. And you can actually see inside your organs. She did so well that they were able to close her immediately. So that's fantastic. We spend one important part to note. I had no idea she had red hair until after the surgery. No idea. Literally no clue. She had had a hat on, I mean, like a bonnet on or whatever, like a toboggan thing on the entire time. And I just never took anything off of her. And so they told me we had to give her more anesthesia. And I'm like, why did you have to give her more anesthesia? Like, what's the thought process? They were like, she has red hair. And so we had to give her more. So it's going to take her one to wake up. I was like, what is
the connection between red hair and anesthesia?
I'm like, Trey didn't tell me she had red hair. He goes, well, I guess I really didn't notice. I hadn't really seen her head either. And so I'm like, what? And so the reason why I'm laughing and why I'm like, what just happened? When me and my ex-boyfriend broke up in college, I was like, I'm going to be a new person. I hate life. I'm changing who I am. And I dyed my hair red. And I wanted to be a redhead. And so anyway, it's funny and ironic that I have a child who has red hair and it's fire red, you know? So it turns out way down the line, like great grandparents had red hair. There's nobody in our immediate families that have red hair. So it's just, anyway.
She was just born a firecracker. And what do you know why the red hair had anything to do with the anesthesia?
I don't know a ton behind that, aside from all redheads have to have more anesthesia. Their pain tolerance is different than folks that don't have red hair. And I was like, that is so weird. Okay, whatever. We just knew that going forward in all of her surgeries. So fast forward, she does well. Most hypo babies stay in the hospital anywhere from 6 months to a year. We're out in 20 days. I'm like, I am not going home. I don't know where you are not kicking me out of this hospital. Like, I don't know what to do. They were like, she's fine. She's great. We predict she is going to live literally to be 100. Like, she is, we don't say this about many of our hypo babies. Like, she's great. Go home. So she was going to have another open heart surgery, which she did at four months old, rocked it. We were in the hospital for 3 days. I'm like, we have to leave? She just had open heart surgery. Like, I'm not leaving. And they're like, yes, you are. She did great. Again, doing great. So God obviously showed up big in those moments. But so in June, trying to get my dates right, in June, I find out that there is going to be an opening with FedEx in the Madison area. And so I'm talking to that manager and my director, who is currently my director at the time, was going to oversees that area too. And they're like, we're going to move you home. And I'm like, oh my gosh, really? They're like, you have to interview for formality, but you need to get your house ready to sell. And we want you in Madison in 3 weeks. I'm like, oh, it's the greatest moment of my life. Like, it's amazing. So in that moment, it hit me. We were in Memphis the whole time so that we could be at Le Bonheur. And so that we were where the Lord wanted us to be. And I say that, nothing wrong with Larry Batson and Jackson, but they're not known for their cardiovascular surgeons. Dr. Knott Craig, cardiovascular surgeon, and all the cardiology team, they're top ranked in the country. They have a massive success rate of these surgeries. And it just hit me that God knew what was going to happen, where we needed to be. And he shut every door and every opportunity and told me to be quiet every time. I was like, why are we still in Memphis? And so it's just, it spoke volumes. He puts us where we need to be, even when we don't understand why. Because we don't get to know why all the time. That's not how it works with the Lord, turns out. But I'm so thankful to be a part, I mean, to just be able to share with people, God puts you where you are when you need to be there, regardless if you understand why. There is a reason for everything that happens in our life. And I'm so thankful that I lived in the Memphis area and that we were able to be with doctors that took care of her. And you're like, hey, she passed away, so what good did the doctors do, right? But turns out, we moved to Madison, right? Fantastic. We buy a home. We move into our home about the end of August, okay, of 2019. So turns out, too, want to share, my sister lives a few houses down, and we're extremely close. The Lord did that for a reason. And I didn't know that at the time. But I'm like, this is great. Like, I'm going to be living up in the neighborhood of my sister. You know, I'm 2 miles from my mom. Like, I'm a few miles from my other sister. Like, this is just great. And so life is about to be bougie. Mary Odin is super healthy. Like, they're predicting she's going to live forever. Like, life is now, on, you know, doing good. Mm-hmm. At the beginning of September, she catches a common cold. And it unfortunately went downhill from there. It turned into myocarditis, which myocarditis is an infection of the heart. We spent about 6 days in the hospital. And on the first day when we got there, she basically was flatlined. And really didn't think that they were going to be able to really bring her back and the quality of life. And I'm having to make decisions like, she does become a vegetable. Am I going to pull the plug? Which Trey and I always promised that we would not allow her to live in a terrible, non-mobile situation. Like, if she's just going to lay there and a machine's keeping her alive, we're not going to do that. So that was a very hard day. But miraculously, she started improving. And the ER doctors are like, we don't know what's going on, but she's getting a little bit better. And so we spend a little while in the ICU. And she starts to improve. She gets some medicine that she needs, and we kind of get her to a stable place where they're like, y'all can go home. So we go home on a Saturday on September 7th. Okay. She's doing pretty good. I mean, she's not back to normal, but she's getting better. Sunday, she's doing pretty good. And Sunday night, in the middle of the night, the Lord wakes me. And it's one of those moments like I like pop out of bed. And I had this massive urge to get her out of her pack and play, because I want to add, we had just moved into our home like 2 weeks ago and nothing was unpacked at all. Like, our furniture was put together, but like, we were living out of boxes. Her whole, no one of her room was up. We just moved in and hadn't had time to unpack. So she's in the room with us in her pack and play. And then about 2 o'clock in the morning, when the Lord woke me up, I had this huge feeling to put her in the bed with us. And she never slept in the bed with us for safety reasons. And just, we didn't want to have her in the bed with us. And so we put her in the bed with us. She slept next to us that night. And that morning, so it's September 9th, and it's probably around 7 o'clock. She slept late. She was a wonderful baby. She loved me by sleeping late. And I loved that. And so, at about 7 o'clock, she's still in the bed and we're kind of getting ready. And she screams this like screeching scream and like flips over. And we're like, what was that noise? Like, I'll never forget it.
Kate's story is to be continued. Part 2 of this episode will be coming very soon. Thank you for listening to this episode of Wellbeing Well Said, the podcast. If you liked what you heard and you would like to support me, it would mean so much if you would subscribe to the show, rate and review, and spread the word. Tell your friends, tag me on Instagram, all the things. That really does help me grow and helps me create more content that I can put out for you all.